considering into action group.
Everybody, I'm an alcoholic. My name is David.
Hey, David.
I really thought he was going to introduce me as Homeless David. And the meeting told me, hey, you're Homeless David, right? I'm like, no, I'm not homeless. He goes, no, I'm a homeless, right? I'm like, ah, very true, very true. So, yeah, that was a decision because I'm about to deploy here in a couple of weeks, but I'll get to that in a minute, if at all. But I'd really like to thank a friend for asking me to speak here. It's always an honor and a privilege to speak whenever asked. I was going to wear slacks, but I burnt them while ironing them, so the Billy Joel look is what I went for.
Okay.
It pays off. And but I don't have a home group, but I have a sponsor. He knows that he sponsors me, and I do my best to work with other alcoholics as often as I can and try to share that message of experience, strength, and hope with them. Hope being the most important one, because I did not relate when I got here in 2010, 2011. I did not stay sober then, because I was not an alcoholic then. My sobriety is January 1, 2013. I grew up in Northern Virginia. I'm 3 out of 4 kids, regular, I'm saying in quotes for those of you listening to the tape, I guess. Regular home, I don't know what that means like to you, but I grew up in an area where there's an abundance of people and it's very diverse, and you know, I hated school. I always felt different than the other older two siblings. I was 4 years old when the younger sibling came into the world, so whoops, right? We're all whoopsies, and so my parents loved us. You know, they brought us to church twice a year, Christmas and Easter, and they try to, you know, bring us to church sometimes more often than that, but I never understood the idea of church or religion, and I had a hard time paying attention, so that kind of made it difficult for me. I can't even imagine how my parents dealt with me as a kid. I was a gremlin. I you know, bucked the system from a very young age. I always felt different than, and I could never measure up, and I was never smart enough or strong enough, and my older siblings were very alpha-type people, and I fancied myself as a B-type of person, very relaxed, very chill. It's ironic now because I'm not really, but I'll get to that. So, okay, I'll just cut to the chase. Long and short, if you drink and drug long enough and hard enough, you won't talk either. So, you know, I just thought for years and years and years I was a B-type person because I was so relaxed. But it was just because I was really inebriated all the time. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I grew up in this suburbs, right, Northern Virginia, and I went to school. I hated it. I loved skipping school, or even better, I'd go to school, pretend I'd be sick, and then I would get out of school. And I would just play video games at home, or I would sleep, or I would magically feel better around 4 p.m. It was great. And I would be able to go out and play with my friends, go ride bikes, fall out of trees. You know, kids used to do that. It's fun. Mm-hmm. So growing up, that was just it, right? Almost had the truancy officer come to my, they did come to my parents' house because I missed so much school. They said, don't do that. You need to go to school. I said, okay. So that was pretty much my MO. Still haven't had alcohol yet. I still haven't had alcohol, but I just feel different than. And I was diagnosed with some things, and that also set me apart emotionally and tremendously from my siblings and from my friends. I never knew how to talk to people. I always felt like everybody else in the room but me knew how to talk to each other and hang out and hold a conversation, but I didn't. I felt so alien to everybody. And so once I found 7th grade, I was in 7th grade, so it's 11, 12, somewhere in there. Found a person in my class who smelled like cigarettes. I was like, were you smoking or is that coffee? He goes, smoking cigarettes. And I thought, that's a cool guy and I want to be a cool guy. So I hanged out with that guy. His name was Kyle. So me and Kyle hanged out all summer long, and I finally had alcohol because his parents were basically absentee parents. He was raised by his grandparents, and they were super low vis. They didn't really care what he did. So one day I find myself in this crusty basement, and there's this wooden door that has a very skinny pantry, and I was tall enough by then to reach the light, and there was on the very, very top shelf a big jug of rum cream. I still remember that disgusting stuff to this day. Pretty memorable. I didn't get drunk, but I definitely understood why adults liked alcohol. Oh, mind you, when I was a young kid, neither of my parents drank. One of them may or may not be in this fellowship, but they told me, hey, you have alcoholism on both sides of your family, so be careful. I was like, I'm 7. I don't know what that means, but all right, we'll do, right? So anyways, I'm like 12 at this point. I'm like, rum cream, all right. he took a little sip, and I was like, I took a big, big sip, regretted it immediately, it burned. Sweet, right-ish? I still remember. But on the way down, it burns, you know, and it hit my stomach, and I started feeling very, very serene, very relaxed, one with the universe. Much like now, but I don't need alcohol right now. So, for the first time in those long 12 years, I'd actually felt okay. My fists kind of unclenched, my shoulders dropped, and I didn't have all that chatter upstairs in my brain like I had been for a while. And they say on certain medications, don't take with alcohol. It's just because they don't want you to have a good time. So I found that I could save a lot of money by continuing to take my prescribed medication and drink on top of it. At 13, 14 years old, right? And so at age 14, a couple years later, I find myself again in a situation where I have found a friend who has knows a person. We're just free range. This whole fridge and liquor cabinet open, and I had my first, pretty sure I blacked out then. And that was when I finally understood, oh, before it was a sip. Now, okay, this is why people drink. You get drunk. And I loved it. I really did. I did not know what the porcelain princess was. I became very acquainted with her that evening. And if you haven't drank 12 Mike's Hard Lemonade to start the evening, it's very acidic and hurts on the way up. So it was one of those times where I felt ashamed, but I was 14 years old and hungover and kind of felt cool, you know. I was like, man, I'm a man, you know. Did I already, boy, did I know. And so that set me on a track to want to do that as often as possible. And I dabbled in other forms of alcohol, but that's all I'll say there. And so every single time that I was near alcohol, I tried to stay away from it and do the other things, because then I wasn't an alcoholic, proving my parents wrong. Thus, like we read, proving myself an exception to the rule. I can't be an alcoholic if I haven't drank. However, it's not how much I drink or how often I drink. It's not that my parents were alcoholics or that I have alcoholism on my family. I'm an alcoholic simply because I drank long enough, hard enough, and I believe at a young enough age to become dependent on alcohol. And it can happen to anybody. I do silly things under the influence, but that's not the insanity of that drink. The insanity of that drink is when I am without it, and I know, based on countless attempts over years and years and years, I find myself 18, 19 years old, in an AA meeting, I kind of know that I might have a problem, but I don't really. And I have a temporary sponsor, his name's John, and they say, go to meetings, you know, go to 90 meetings, and here's a book, but you know, here's some coffee, and we're going to go hang out after, we're going to go bowling, and I don't need your friendship, I'm good. It's really creepy, I thought I had a problem, I didn't know this was a religious thing, I'm out, you know. But in that interim of me being dry, for that 5 days or so, what did I say, 2010 that was, I realized that my brain was now louder and crazier, and I could not really understand why. I felt like everybody was like more mean, and I was more like irritable, and like my fist clenched up, and it's like annoyed at any little thing. A sound would set me off. Like I didn't understand why I was so angry. And then I had, you know, like four or five days of sobriety, and I had gone to like two meetings. I called this fella maybe once, and I went to wrestling practice on Friday with my buddy Randy, and we were in high school. And I think it's a senior year. And I go back over to his house, no intention in the world of drinking or anything, but I just didn't feel right. And I knew I should probably go to one of those meetings that dude told me about. And I did. I went over to Randy's house because I knew a couple of other buddies would be there. They weren't in wrestling, but I just got done working out. I'm feeling really good. You know, my cardiovascular's back, and I'm quick, and people, well, did they pet my pride when they asked? It was like my second day of open mat. And they said, is this like your second year? I was like, no, I just had a brother who beat the crap out of me when I was younger. So I know all the tricks, you know. Plus, I'm really tall, so it helps for leverage. But at any rate, I inevitably get drunk at Randy's house. Like that. It was literally like night and day. I don't remember how. Like, I had this, I don't know, opportunity, I guess. Not in that moment at all did I remember that I get crazy and drunk and too drunk whenever I drink, even just one. One is too many and a thousand is not enough. I kind of knew that, but I didn't. I had this weird, bad feeling, but it was quickly relieved because I was drunk and I was happy. And so I was like, oh, I don't know what to make a big fuss about. Why would I call this guy? Why would I go to meetings? You know, like, it's right here. It's right here the whole time. Am I crazy? Are they crazy? I don't know. So that pattern went on for a few more years. I'm still living at home. I'm now turning 20, 21 years old. I'm now 21 and a half years old. You know how you say it when you're an adult, 21 and three quarters, to this day. And so I get pulled over in Virginia for an aroma in my vehicle. And funny enough, I wasn't pulled over in the vehicle. My vehicle was parked at the gas pump. I was inside of the gas station in December in shorts and a t-shirt, smelling of an aroma. And there was a cop in there, cut me in line, paid for his stuff, walked out before I did. And then as soon as I'm trying to leave, he's walking up with his beanie, he's putting gloves on, he goes, come here. I'm like, uh-oh. And I'm just trying to get my Gatorade and my chocolate and my cigarettes because I'm really hungry for no reason. And so they search my vehicle, and me and my buddy get an offense charge, first offense, slap on the wrist thing, and they show up to court. I said, okay, mind you, December 20th, and I know I'm screwed. I shake this gentleman's hand, and I'm plastic. And I said, thank you. And he was like, okay. Shake the cop's hand. Because in my heart, I kind of knew, thank God. I finally found, like, okay, I am done. Because for those last couple of years between that wrestling practice post me getting drunk and this night, 3 years, 2.5, 3 years have gone by. But it has just gotten progressively worse with relationships, with my family first. I was alienated from all of my siblings. And they didn't really want much to do with me. The friends I had were, it was very conditional. It was, hey, what do you have? Okay, we'll put our money. Okay, we'll go get drunk. I was very lonely. I was living at my parents' house. I'm working at like coffee shops, making minimum wage. It was like $8.50 then, not $15. So that's funny. And so, but still, like, I'm living at home. I feel awful that all of my friends are in a year or so about to graduate from college and go get real jobs. And I'm stuck in this rut and this cycle of never-ending crap. And I cannot get out of it. And I don't know what I'm doing. And finally, I get caught. I kind of feel like in this moment, I'm looking back, I'm like, maybe I did want to get caught. I was just done, like, oh, let me just be real risky and, you know, walk in here. I saw the squad car, I'm not dumb. I'm like, that's fine, they ain't gonna bust me. And they busted me. Oh, did they bust me? And so I shook his hand and I kind of felt, it was the first time I actually felt like some sort of, something that wasn't me, but it was in me, right? I know that to be my higher power this day. I'll say God for simplicity's sake, but. Again, I'm not religious, but I kind of felt like this piece of like, all right, cool, like this could be a good thing. That, like, all right, well, you know, now I need to tell my parents I've been caught. And, so anyways, things not going well, and my relationships and my emotional sobriety is not well. I've pretty much stopped taking all the prescription meds that I was told it was a good idea to keep taking those and don't just stop all at once. And I was like, nah, I'll be fine. I was not fine. I was very far from fine. I was the opposite of fine. I was delusional. I was insane. And I just didn't know what else to do. And so I shook this cop's hand and took my ticket and put it in the glove box. And then me and my buddy went to the party we were already on our way to. And got wasted, you know? How insane is that? I did not realize then, but I know now, I was beyond choice of drink. I did not know that I was trying to battle Mike Tyson in the ring, and I've had 2 warm-up sessions. He's a professional. I will never be better than him. I was going up against alcoholism, a progressive mental disease as I know it to this day. It only gets worse, never better, in my experience. So we get to the party, we tell everybody, yeah, we just got busted, blah, 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 blah. They're like, oh, that's crazy. I'm like, I know, right? And I start lighting up this thing, and I start drinking some stuff and doing what I do. I don't want to feel. I do not want to feel. I don't want to talk about me. I'll listen to your stuff, but I just want to get drunk, man. I just want to get out of my brain and not worry about anything, because if everybody would just leave me alone, it would be fine. But that night was kind of one of the first nights that I really realized there's something wrong here. Like, the reactions of other people to me drinking after they had just heard what had happened were like, why are you at this party? I was like, the party, duh. Excuse me. But they might have been normal, rational people, you know. That's not me. That's not my deal. I'm an alcoholic, and I didn't really realize it, but I had that feeling. So a week goes by, and I tell my parents, we're almost at New Year's, right? Tell my parents, hey, you're going to be getting a lot of mail. Because a day prior, I was at Starbucks, and I texted my sister, my older sister, who I didn't have a good relationship with. I was like, hey, I kind of got in trouble. Can you take all this mail out of the mailbox and bring it to me or get rid of it? She goes, yeah, sure. And she shows up with a bundle of mail from all these lawyers. Because once you get on the public record, you know, it's whatever, the whole thing. And they're like, oh, that's crazy. I bet there's going to be more today. So I was like, I need to tell mom and dad immediately. I don't want them to know or find out from a letter. I want them to hear it from me, their son, their 21-year-old man child, living in their house with a car that has bald tires and no idea how to change my own oil. So I tell them, and I cry, and it's real emotional, and they're like, so what's your plan? I was like, I have no idea. I guess I'll go to a meeting and whatnot. But I'll never forget this. I did tell them. I was like, I just don't know when. So she was like, oh, dude, okay. Really? Really? You're busted, you know, life sucks, and you just might get sober? Great. So anyways, so if you haven't caught on, my mom is the sober one in the family. So I eventually get woken up on Sunday morning, January 1, 2013, at like 9:30. She's like, hey, wake up. I forgot I told her I'd go to a meeting with her this morning. It's the day after New Year's Day. And apparently I just, in a drunken kind of hungover stupor, said, oh, I'll catch the next one. Oh, she didn't like that very much. That door darn near kicked off the hinges, and she was like, she stomped her foot and said, damn it, David, change takes change. I was like, I'm up, let's go. I put some water on my face. I had long, shaggy hair down my shoulders. I was very, very skinny, very emaciated. I'm 6'3". I was 145-ish pounds then. I was not eating very much. I was just drinking to die. So I went to this meeting, and there were familiar faces. It was funny because that dude who was my temp sponsor, those few years prior, was there. I was like, oh, they've been following me, huh? His father was celebrating like 4,000 years of sobriety or something like that. It was like 42 years, I think, 38, something like that. And so I don't know this at the time. I'm looking down at a 45-degree angle. I'm looking at everybody's shoes. I'm too scared to look anybody in the eyes. And I feel somebody, you know, put their arm on my shoulder. This guy named Greg, he's a good-ish friend. I don't really keep up with him. But anyway, he says, hey, man, you all right? I said, no, not really. And I started crying because I was honest. For 7 years, I've been honest with a freaking stranger, dude. I was like, nope, not at all, man. He goes, it's going to be all right. You never have to feel this way again. Dude, when I tell you the floodgates broke, they broke. I was broken. I was done, you know? And so it was a big meeting. It was like this size meeting, and it was square tables all the way around. There was just 80-ish people. It was a lot of people, man. It was intimidating. It was a bunch of old heads. Like, it was hundreds of years of sobriety in that room. And I remember getting the little white chip at the – they do halftime. They don't do it at the end of the meeting. But anyway, they were doing chips and announcements, and I was, you know, pat on the shoulder. Hey, that's for you. It's called a 24-hour chip. Here's a white chip. Don't matter. Same. Are you willing to stop doing it your way and maybe try someone else's? Like, absolutely. So I got up, and my knees were not like waist down, numb. I floated there. The adrenaline dump, I was so scared and shaky, and I pick up this chip, and I just hug this woman who was handing out the chips, and I sat back down, continued to cry a lot, and I heard things in that meeting. I couldn't tell you what they are to this day. Don't remember. My memory is still, I'm still waiting for my memory to come back. I think I put holes in it. And so I do remember that guy coming up to me again and saying, hey, do you need a sponsor? I said, sure. What is that? I started asking questions, and I'm being honest. Mind you, I've been working at coffee shops for years. It was like the first of the month / the year, and they were redoing service positions. And I told John, hey, and he goes, hey, you should get a service position. I said, well, what's that? So he answered my question, what a sponsor is. He goes, well, basically, you take my number, you call me every day, and I'll walk you through the 12 steps, which, dude, when I tell you, this is how I found out I was an A-type person, it was this moment. Because I asked him, like, a four-year-old asked questions rapid fire, because I was just like, well, what are the steps? Well, you know, these things, well, where are those? What's in this big book? The Bible? No. Okay, what's their service position? He's like, it's something that you commit to once a week or, you know, something like that, and you make it a commitment. I'm like, why would anybody do that? He goes, do you want to try this way of life or not? You know, is your way working? I was like, okay, you're right. So I was like, I want to do coffee. He goes, no, you'll be the greeter. I was like, I thought he didn't hear me. I was like, oh, I said coffee. He goes, I don't care what you want. You'll be the greeter. I know you're shy. I need you to get out of your bubble and to meet everybody and to welcome the newcomer. I was like, but I don't have any sobriety. He goes, you've been sober this hour? What a revelation. I proceeded to, I had his number on my phone. I took it down to, you got the same number. He goes, oh, you have my number. I'm like, yeah, man, I'm an alcoholic. I call you if I'm drinking. Why would I do that? And so I don't think I actually said that to him. But needless to say, him and I became good friends. he took me through the 12 steps. I was a service physician greeter for like 2 years. And that night, that first night that I went home, I was so weirded out. The fact that I just stayed inside, I was so scared to like leave, because I knew I would go to the dude's house. I would find myself at a party. I was like, dude, like I have a court date coming up in a month, and I'm not sober for the court date. I'm really not. I'm so done being David. I didn't know who I was. I didn't, because I started drinking at 12, and then go through all those formidable years, and I just got lost in the sauce, dude. So I ended up feeling so relieved that I put my head on that pillow that night, and I was like, holy crap, like I went a day without doing any mind-altering substance. This is wild. And so I woke up the next morning, and I didn't want to call John. I didn't know what I was going to talk to him about. I called him, and he goes, hello. I said, hey. That was it. That's all I said. And he goes, what are you doing today? I was like, I don't know what to talk to you about, man. He goes, that's okay. It's a good start. I mean, you're honest. So I was like, okay, what do we do? He's like, nope. I'm going to tell you what he told me, and I'm going to tell you how I do it now. He said, we're going to get some time under your belt before we start working these steps, which might be controversial. Me, personally, I think I'm lucky that I didn't drink. And if you're kind of confused why, I hope the rest of these few minutes will explain, because I don't want to start getting on too many tangents, which I do. So we took like a month before I was on step two, and then step three, and then step four by month four, and then I was on step nine that same day. So it wasn't really the step of the month club, but it kind of looked like that in the beginning, and then it was an exponential function, and then we were right there where we wanted to be and started making amends. So I'll get to that. But I don't believe in that. I believe in those few months, I was between remedies, right? That's what the big book says, at least. It says, if I have alcohol to treat my alcoholism, and then you take that away from me, what do you have? You have an untreated alcoholic. I'll be restless, irritable, and discontented. I know what that feels like. I've been that way before. And without a defense against the first drink, because that problem resides in my mind, I'm basically screwed, and it's, you know, it can be scary. I can start white-knuckling it and try to fill it with other things like yoga or more meetings and more service positions and throwing fellowship into it. And those are all wonderful, great things, but it's not the true remedy that I need as an alcoholic to survive on a day-to-day basis and try to spread this message of experience, strength, and hope with another alcoholic who's suffering. The personal way that I try to do it these days is, are you an alcoholic? Yes, cool. And then we work through the steps rapidly, and I'm only going to meet you where as much as you want to. If you're motivation's 100, I'll meet you at 100. I'll drop whatever I'm doing to help you out. And, I'm just grateful that I didn't drink. But that's my personal belief, because I was nuts. I was without a defense against that drink in those months, and it was very volatile. I was, again, not medicated on any prescriptions or my prescriptions and or alcohol. And my brain chemistry was jacked. I was going to meetings. I was drinking lots of coffee, smoking cigarettes. And the weird thing about you people is, when I said, oh, I need to quit smoking cigarettes, sober, quote, sane, i.e. not taking the 12 steps and having a spiritual experience, my sponsor goes, you should probably double up, and hits his cigarette. I'm like, what? Aren't you supposed to be telling me to be healthy? I don't understand. He was like, it's the least of your worries, brother. Hits the cigarette again. I'm like, you people are so weird. And I thought I had it figured out. We're at this meeting at 8 p.m. Brown's Chapel. That was a good meeting. Anyway, I had a lot of fun in recovery, you know, in early sobriety. Earlier, I put it in quotes because I still feel like a jackwagon some days, and I don't know what I'm doing. So, earlier recovery, it was a blast, man. I mean, I was working through the steps. I was going to detox meetings, even though you're supposed to have a year. They're like, you can come. I'm like, okay. You know, I got like 4 or 5 months, and I'm still like sharing to these people who are actually going through it, detoxing 4 or 5 days, because they told me, if you have 2 days, you have the person with 1 day in a way. Share the message, not the mess, that sort of deal. So I got very active in recovery, in AA. I began to get to the meetings early. Sorry about tonight. I was eating pizza. And staying late. I will be doing that. Talking to the newcomer, seeing what they're doing. Talking to the old-timer. Hey, asking questions, right? But it all started with me going to that meeting and feeling it in my soul that I'm done. I don't know what to do, and I'm willing to do it somebody else's way. I've been through a couple of different sponsors in these past 11 years. The first sponsor, he was just not available. He traveled around the world, literally, for his business, and he got sick, meaning he stopped working the steps, and I no longer wanted what he had. right? I'll put it that. I'll say that. And so I try to find somebody who's doing better than me. That's what I'm always looking for, is who's doing better than me now in this aspect, that aspect, this aspect. But it always starts with the spiritual. And to this day, I still have somebody who is doing better than me spiritually. And, you know, my second sponsor was a good man. He passed a few years ago. I remember being on the ship. I get a text message from a buddy of mine. And he goes, "Hey, I'm so sorry to hear about Chris." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" I go to his Facebook page and, holy crap, I didn't even know he was sick. He had cancer. I had no idea. Dude was 45. First time I'd actually been to a funeral sober. It was wild. This was 2019, I think. And But I just say that to say, like, I never quite know why I'm sober. Why did me, out of all of my buddies, I'm the only one who's still sober this day. I got one buddy, I just went on a ski trip, literally Tuesday through Thursday, with two friends, one of which was the guy who texted me in 2019, Ryan, and my other buddy, Luke. And Luke is no longer active in recovery, if you will, meaning drunk. And I did not really know to what extent, because he kept saying, "No, I'm not really an alcoholic." I'm like, "Oh, cool. Not judging. Let's go ski." I never coughed more resentments. I did not have that good of cell reception on that mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And I really hope he does well. But it was apparent to me that sometimes people are in your life for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. You know, I don't foresee myself being really too close friends with Luke anymore. That kind of sucks, because he used to have more time than I did. I used to look up to him. Now he's smart and he's an alcoholic, so he's kind of a jerk. So there's that. But I'm just saying that is, like, you know, it's weird. You know, I never want to take this thing for granted, this thing being my recovery, this spiritual way of life that I have today. And I do take it for granted. I forget that I'm an alcoholic. I forget that I'm able to be in the military because I'm an alcoholic. Because I'm an alcoholic, I have a way of living. These 12 steps in this big book. That big book that I accidentally left at my mom's house yesterday. And I was afforded the opportunity to have dinner with them. She allowed me to use her four-wheel drive vehicle to go up this mountain, right? Like, these are beautiful things that I have due to recovery, right? Mind you, I did not have good relationships with my family or my friends. I didn't really have any friends. Now I have true friends. I have true spiritual experiences with people, places, things, you know, just... I'm able to live life. It does not mean that life's great and perfect, right? Like I told you, I've been to funerals, I've been to weddings. I've had highs, I've had lows. I mean, earlier this morning, I thought I was having a freaking panic attack because I was on leave, technically. And then I was told, "Hey, you know how you didn't have all the time that the rest of the troop did for deployment? Well, you need to have everything packed up. No worries, you're on leave, but just make sure everything's packed up by 09 on Monday in 3 days." I'm like, "Cool, I'll be in work right now." And my stuff's splayed out. I'm like, "Dude, this is my first deployment. I'm going overseas. I don't know where all my clothes are. Like, I'm trying to pack stuff. Certain things can go in certain bags. Certain things can't, because some are carry-ons. Some are going to a metal box that are going to be cooking in Bahrain at 135 degrees. Don't know what I'm doing." It's freaking out, man. It's like 10 o'clock in the morning today. And at that moment, I'm like, "Oh, yeah, God." I said a quick prayer. I'm like, "God, help anybody on the road next to me." No, I didn't say that. But I said, "God, please help me. I don't know what to do. Just some small little redirection." If that helped or not, I don't know. Was that prayer answered? Not sure. But I'll tell you one thing. I believe it did. And my energy started to get brought down. I then called an alcoholic. Asked them how they were doing. Called another alcoholic. Got their voicemail. Called another alcoholic. See how they were doing. And just kept doing that as I'm putting things in to my bag. And I kept getting calls from work saying, "Hey, what's going on with this?" I'm like, "Oh, boy." And had to answer that. And then I went into work for a couple hours, scoped out the space, because the space was the big thing. I'm very OCD. I like to make sure everything's checklisted and good to go. So I needed to open up this big metal box, excuse me, and see, all right, how much space am I working with? Can I bring the Xbox? You know what I mean? That's for real. You think it's a joke? It's not. It's not a joke. It's very real. And so And at this moment, I've called some alcoholics, I've prayed, I've tried to see where I can be helpful, I've coordinated the issue, we'll call it, at work. I've told everybody, "Hey, that this is what I did to rectify that a month and a half ago," and they were sure as anything able to corroborate that story. And she goes, my boss was like, "Oh, you're right, this is waiting on such and so, somebody who's very much more high ranking than me." I was like, "I know, I told you that." So anyway. I was glad that I'm able to be sober and be able to keep up with the truth. It's way easier than trying to keep up with lies. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not perfect. I still speed. I still kind of roll stop signs sometimes. You know, I still lie, cheat, and steal. I just do it in a very less degree. So anyways, I go home, call my sister on the way home, my older sister, the one who got me the mail. That one day with all those lawyers, and had a good conversation with her, like an hour. You know, I don't talk to her very often, but I'm able to have conversations with my siblings. I guess it's wild. The one buddy that I went on the ski trip with, he asked me and my wife to be the godparents of his first child a few years ago. What a blessing, dude. Are you kidding me? Me, the drunken 12-year-old alcoholic skateboarder who works at Starbucks and other coffee shops like that and lies and steals money out of his mom's purse for food and stays out late and doesn't check in like he told them he would. And that guy, really? He's a god? I mean, hopefully not, right? I hope they live. And came out weird, you know what I mean? It's a blessing to be able to be available for people, to be a person, be a son, be a brother, be a husband. I'm married now, which is wonderful. You know, that in and of itself is a miracle. She's not an alcoholic, but she's also not sober. She's not an alcoholic, and she also doesn't drink. She's like normal, you know what I mean? So weird. Such a weird thing. But such a blessing. I don't know why I told you that. I have no purpose in this conversation. By conversation, I mean this speak talk. But she's a wonderful person, and she takes the time to learn the lingo of like AA, is I guess what I was trying to get at. And when I joined the military, I got sober and then joined the military. Very odd. 5 years sober, I was tired of being sick and tired. And funny enough, I was on the phone with Luke then. He was sober then. And he was like, hey, man, what are you doing? I was like, I'm just hanging out at this vape shop. You know, I used to vape, I used to smoke and all that stuff. And I don't do that anymore. And he goes, cool, man. Hey, I was just thinking about you. He was in college at this point. He had his career on track. He was doing well. I looked up to him. And he goes, what are you going to do for your living? I was like, I want to be a stand-up comedian. He goes, yeah. But realistically, you know, what do you want to do? I was like, I don't know. I might as well join the military. He goes, at this point, man, you may as well. I was like, actually, that's a good idea. Hold on, I'll call you back. He goes, no, Dave. I hanged up on him. And then I was in the recruiting office. Seriously, that's how it worked out, man. It was great. And I come from a long military family, very, very big Irish family. We love having children. And so a lot of family in all of the various branches. And so I chose the Navy. Don't know why. I hate ships. Found that out. I have no idea.
You had to find out.
So got to a big, big ship. My first command, I was like, hey, this is really bad. I don't like this. I need to get out of here. And so I ended being afforded the opportunity to get my vision fixed through the Navy, which was a beautiful thing. I'm so grateful for that. And normally when I say that joke, my eyes are crossed, but, you know. No, really. So I did that because I wanted to do something better. I wanted to do a special job in the Navy, something very, very few people get the opportunity to do. I went to this selection course and then quit. And I just say that to tell you, I got a letter from the officer in charge saying, please come back. They saw something in me that I didn't see in myself at the moment. But it was that they knew if I came back and I fixed the issue that I was having, I'd probably have a pretty good shot of joining that community, that very, very cool community. And so that is my plan. And to this day, I actually am at a command that is affording me the opportunity to have the time to train, to work in the pool, on the land, physically fit, as well as work on their boats. Because I'm a diesel mechanic in the Navy. Didn't know if I said that. So I work on diesel boats. And if those are fixed, then it's a big boy job. Like, the rest of the time is yours. As long as the boats are fixed, the admin is good to go, and nothing else needs to be done, go do what you need to do. It's a beautiful thing. That does not happen in the regular fleet. What happens in the regular fleet is you're done by noon, and they tell you to stay until 16 because no good reason, just because. Go find something to clean. Go clean that. Go sweep the sun. No, go sweep the shade off the sidewalk. That type of stuff. Go mop up the rain. That type of deal.
Yeah.
But I say that kind of in jest. So anyway, I'm at a great command, great people. I have relationships with my family. I've made amends. I still continue to make amends because I still have a mouth and a brain. And tells me I'm right and you're wrong. And then I open it and tell them how it is. And then I am being mean and unjust. And then I discuss that with another human being after I pray about it. It doesn't take that long for me to realize I've done something wrong. Because I feel it in the inside. I have that connection with that higher power. You know, that good versus bad, right versus wrong. Small voice, right? And so I am afforded these opportunities. And this command that I'm at, normally they would try to keep me for the 2-3 years that I owe to the Navy. But not only did I get in trouble for something, but the officer in charge said, hey, don't even worry about it. Put that behind you. Go on this deployment. We'll help get you to that selection course again. I was like, are you kidding? He was like, nope. You work hard for me like you have been, and I'll take care of you. Whew, buddy. If there isn't a God, I don't know what is. I mean, that is... being able to go back, going a first time does not happen for most people. Going back a second time does not happen for most people at all, let alone after getting in trouble like I did. That just does not happen. It doesn't. The odds are you winning the lottery are probably greater. I cannot tell you in words how grateful I am. That's why I try to show it. That's why when somebody asks me, hey, can you speak? Absolutely. Freaking literally. Hey, can you pick this dude up? Maybe. If it's in my skin. No, I'm kidding. But if it's on the way, I'll pick them up. No, but... I still try to be active in my recovery as well as my other friends' recovery and call them, see how they're doing. I'm afforded this opportunity to be sober. I may as well take advantage of the opportunities. I didn't really think I'd be burned out this quick. I still have like 10-ish minutes, 9-ish minutes. But I can always end early. I'll say this, then I'll shut up. I really appreciate AA for... what it is. It's the 12 steps found in that big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. The stories in the back are wonderful as well. I could be better about reading those also. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and tell you, I love that story. It's my favorite story. I don't know that story at all. What I do know is my story. And my story sounds a lot like yours when I sit down and listen to what your story is. And then that's the beauty of AA, is being able to listen to another alcoholic and their perspective of, you know, what was it like when you drank? What happened? What it's like now? Well, in a nutshell, it was crap when I drank. What happened is I stumbled into a meeting and some dude agreed to sponsor me, which I was a skateboarder. Then, in 2013, I thought sponsorship was, you know, we'll pay you to rep our brand and here's a new board, you know. Skateboard around the town with this board, you know, and we'll pay you money to do that. That's a sponsor. Right? That's what's, you know, Monster Energy. That's a sponsor. You know? But not here. Not here. It is a qualified friend is what I'll coin that as. I think I'm the first one to say that. But if not, it's okay. No thought I have is original, so I'm all right with that. But a sponsor is just a qualified friend who has worked through these 12 steps in that big book, and their job, my job as a sponsor, is to work with other alcoholics and walk them through that process, those 12 steps. It'd be insane of me to go to a 12-step program and not work those 12 steps, wouldn't it? Because what you would really have is coffee and BS, right? So those steps afforded me a relationship with a higher power that I can now call God. Again, not religious. I've tried going to church. I've gone to Buddhist temples. I still don't know what I am. I just know that I call God because it's easier to say that than whatever I think it is. And it's just not me, right? It's something that I can actually pray to and rely on a daily basis with all my problems. With some of my problems. With a few of my problems. I am still a selfish individual. I'm still a human being, and I love the fact that I get to have this experience sober, and not a lot of people do. So if there's anything you can get from this talk, is if you are in this room right now, please take advantage of life and what it is. Because if you woke up today, you're winning. If you're breathing right now, you're winning, I promise. It might not seem like it, because everybody's situations and stuff is different, but I'm telling you, from somebody who came from negative nothing, to having some things to live for, it's seriously worth it. And it's not the monetary stuff. It's not the money in the bank or the money, the honey, or the car. It is truly just having a relationship with a God and being able to live that plane. I don't know, something about it, man. What alcohol and drugs used to do for me, this thing does for me tenfold. Seriously, truly. And I'm able to make rational-ish decisions on a regular basis, depending on how close to that God I was in that morning, if I did or did not get my day started right. So what that looks like for me is I wake up and I try to pray. Because I wake up every morning with untreated alcoholism, and I go to bed, you know, in some sort of condition of recovery. And I hope that throughout those 24, 18-ish hours that I was awake and conscious, I was kind to my fellows and my God. And I pray every single day. That my actions may demonstrate my gratitude to him and his and my fellows, but some days I fall short of that. But it's the available that's it's available to me is the beautiful thing. So again, thank you so much for allowing me to do this, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
sharing, Dave.